Why are Christians afraid of biblical criticism? A blog post by me, Aractus. Around a decade ago, one of my Christian friends put forward the view that the Bible should not be subjected to academic inquiry. We were both Christians at the time, of course. By then, I'd heard that view articulated many times, including by the late minister at my former church. If we go back even further, 20 years now, another friend, who was studying at Moore Theological Seminary in Sydney, and for those of you who aren't aware, Moore is the most conservative seminary in Australia and one of the most conservative in the world, was being taught stuff that even I, as unread and uneducated on biblical scholarship at the time, knew was wrong. One time, when I said Jesus spoke Aramaic, he responded dogmatically with, "That's pure conjecture, and my teachers would wipe the floor with you." Now, obviously, after 20 years, my memory's not going to be perfect, but he repeated the phrase pure conjecture at me in a condescending, dogmatic tone. And remember, we were both Christians and both friends at the time. Seminaries do not exist to create free, critical thinking, academic graduates. If they did, they've done a lousy job. Prepare to be shocked by the disparity. By the numbers. There are currently about 8,000 SBL scholars. SBL stands for the Society of Biblical Literature, and those are the people recognized in the West as Bible scholars. In addition to being members of the society, they also need to be currently employed in a Western university, and generally they need to hold a teaching position, or if they don't, be active in some way in biblical related research. We don't count Eastern Bible scholars. By way of comparison, there are at least 800,000 ordained Christian clergy in the world, and that's a conservative estimate. Let that number sink in for a moment. From the Roman Catholic Church's own statistics, there's over 400,000 Roman Catholic priests. And while we don't have precise statistics for the rest of Christianity, we can estimate the number as being at least an additional 400,000 on the following grounds. Firstly, Roman Catholics represent almost exactly 50% of global Christianity. Secondly, they have a global shortage of priests. And thirdly, the barrier to ordination for Protestants is lower and includes women. Because the Roman Catholics have a shortage of priests, there will likely be less retired or part-time clergy working with them compared with non-Catholic denominations. So the true number of global clergy could easily be in excess of 1 million. Bible colleges and seminaries tell a similar story. Conservative seminary Moore churns out over 400 graduates per year. Whereas St. Mark's here in Canberra, which is a moderate Bible college, has less than 10 graduates per year. Most of Moore's graduates go on to work in the church, as that is the goal of seminaries. Whereas most graduates from the moderate Bible colleges like St. Mark's do not. Influence on Christianity. The numbers I've just given you begin to explain why academic biblical scholarship holds such little sway within Christianity today. For every Bible scholar, there is at least 100 clergy. Clergy are in direct regular contact with ordinary Christians, and scholars generally aren't. Therefore, much of what has been known for years, decades, or even centuries among scholars is never even offered for consideration to Christians by their priests. Often, what is considered settled in scholarship is outright denied in the church. More worryingly, the numbers don't even begin to tell the full story. You don't have to be ordained to become a pseudo-academic theologian or apologist and begin creating apologetic material for Christians to consume. There are two types of apologists. The majority are not Bible scholars. Among this group includes Pentecostal musicians that create popular Christian music to profess faith beliefs, as well as pseudo-academics who masquerade as if they are scholars and create material either online or in print for Christians to consume. And even conservative Bible scholars generally cringe at the material they make. The second type of apologist is more insidious. They are conservative or evangelical or fundamentalist Bible scholars who intentionally deceive unlearned Christians. They are professional liars, the equivalent of politicians who are skilled in the shameless use of unmitigated bullshit for promoting their propaganda. I'm not even afraid to name them. Scholars like Daniel B. Wallace. A decade back, Wallace misled Christians in a debate with Bart Ehrman, where he was willing to lie for someone who was later proven to be a fraudster and a criminal. This is Dirk Opnik I'm talking about, obviously. As I'm reading this, Dirk is currently evading authorities. There's a judgment against him owing the Greens, Hobby Lobby, $7 million. And what Daniel Wallace lied about was directly related to antiquities fraud. Now, I'm not suggesting that Wallace himself is guilty of a crime, but he was part of it. Yet he seems to think his role in this was marginal. We can infer this belief because Wallace has since apologized to Bart Ehrman, but he has never apologized to his evangelical Christian audience. I was one of them at the time, and I felt misled and betrayed. And at one time, I felt quite emotional about that as well. I feel he should apologize to the Christians he misled, and his refusal to do so demonstrates to me that his deception is intentional. Another thing that demonstrates this is that he was a part of a group of scholars that directly encouraged the Greens to ignore the professional advice given to them regarding antiquities crime and to purchase stolen antiquities. Again, I'm not saying that Wallace himself is guilty of a crime there, but let me explain how this works. It's his material, and material from other evangelical scholars like him, that is responsible for creating or fostering the fundamentalist beliefs held by those who then later act on those beliefs. It's not just apologetic publications, podcasts, videos, and Christian music. It's also seminars and sermons, online blogs, debates, Bible commentaries, and even Bible translations. Yes, even the best English translation of the Christian Bible, the NRSV updated edition, has deliberate mistranslation put into it by its evangelical translators. You may not believe me. I'll give you one of the most egregious examples there is. Psalm 22:16, or 22:17 in Jewish numbering. In the NRSV updated edition, it reads as follows. For dogs are all around me, a company of evildoers encircles me. They bound my hands and feet. Footnote, meaning of Hebrew uncertain. This verse is so notorious that it even has its own Wikipedia page. The Hebrew is not uncertain. The translation is based on a hypothetical Hebrew variant. Let me repeat that so you understand. Hypothetical. The variant used to translate as bound my hands and feet or pierced my hands and feet is not attested to in any Hebrew manuscript. The footnote is false and deceptive. What it should say is hypothetical reading based on the Greek found in the 4th century CE Christian Old Testament. Or it could say Septuagint, but I feel Christian Old Testament is more accurate. So as you can see, it's quite serious when evangelical scholars make deliberate choices that mislead Christians. And this brings me to the next part. The state of scholarship. The lack of engagement by Christians with biblical scholarship means that they are unaware of the true state of scholarship today. Bible commentaries mislead them into thinking that most Bible scholars agree with faith positions when they don't. Let's stick with Daniel Wallace as an example. You can read a whole series of introductions to New Testament books at the link in my blog to his Bible.org page, and they deceive readers into thinking that the conclusions offered are accurate representations of scholarship. We can infer this is deliberate for the following reasons. Firstly, they are non-scholarly opinion pieces by scholars. But this is not made clear to the reader. Consider a scholar's online blog. A reader would instantly understand that a blog is their opinion platform and not academic. Secondly, conclusions are generally phrased with the words, "we conclude," giving the clear impression to the reader that the "we" means scholars. And thirdly, there are plenty of examples in online forums and social media where Christians unwittingly quote what their Bible commentaries say as, "most scholars think," which is clear evidence that this strategy to mislead is effective. And finally, if this were not the intention, then care would have been given to prevent this misunderstanding. The result of this is that most Christians are exposed only to pseudo-academic opinions by evangelical scholars and not real scholarship. Consequently, Christians are ill-equipped to defend their beliefs about their Bible when challenged by someone with better biblical literacy or who has engaged with real scholarship. I mean no disrespect to Christians, but they don't realize how ignorant they are. People want certainty with their faith beliefs, so they gravitate towards material that agrees with their beliefs. It's the evangelical churches that are flourishing and the moderate ones that are withering. And if you want to read a little bit more on that, there's a good blog post from the evangelical perspective by Reverend Mark Dury, and he's a conservative evangelical in the Anglican Church of Australia. Biblical scholarship undoubtedly raises doubts and challenges doctrines that are fundamental to Christian worldviews. But it also advances knowledge, understanding, it reduces prejudice and dogma, and it is conducive for a kinder, gentler, and more compassionate dialogue. Christians fear it because they're disengaged with it and have a fear of the unknown. They dislike it because it's presented to them using negative framing and prerogative terms. Meanwhile, Christians can't agree amongst themselves how to read and interpret the Christian Bible. Their approaches are wildly inconsistent, both between denominations and compared against historical use, including Jewish. This problem, though, is not unique to Christians. Most other atheists, specifically ex-Christian atheists, are also disengaged and come up with idiotic ideas about the Bible as well. It's a problem of engagement. As briefly mentioned before, most Bible scholars don't care about the dining room table discussions of lay Christians and don't care to correct their misunderstandings of their Bible. In fact, it's even worse than this. Most of them don't want to. Why? Well, they're used to talking to professionals and to their students who are willing to learn with an open mind. And most Christians have very strong beliefs about the Bible. They can be dogmatic, they can become easily offended, and very upset when their opinions are challenged. Nerdy Bible scholars don't want to have to answer dumb questions from random members of the public who have low biblical literacy. And there are just not enough of them in any case. How do you expect 8,000 scholars to individually and personally answer the questions of 2.4 billion Christians? It can't be done. Most scholars are not specialists on the entire Bible either. Some of them specialize on a single book. and spend their entire careers disinterested in the rest of the Bible. There's a prejudiced view against Bible scholars as well. And guess what? Nerds don't like opening themselves up to stigma, bullies, or Bible-bashing fundamentalists. And even if they do, they'll be totally undermined by the evangelical apologists, scholars, who will just go and tell Christians whatever the hell they want to hear anyway. It's difficult for any academic to simultaneously appeal to competing interests. And with biblical scholarship, we're talking about universities, seminaries, journals, publications, all forms of academics, the church in all its denominations, and the laity in all its denominations. The average Christian today, quote-unquote average, is a poor and uneducated woman in her early 20s in Africa or Latin America. And the fastest growing areas for Christianity today are in Africa and Latin America. SBL represents Western scholars and Western institutions, mostly Northern Atlantic. And they are highly educated, very well paid working professionals. Those two cohorts could not be more different to each other. This is a fundamental problem for biblical scholarship. The entire way that it became a profession is that a small number of people in the 18th and 19th century started to question things they weren't permitted by the church to question, so they formed their own academic circles to study the things the church didn't want them to think about. One of the first being, did Moses really write the Torah? They're literally the seminary dropouts who decided not to be priests, but to instead critically examine the Bible. This might help explain why they've failed to engage with Christianity in a positive way that advances Christianity for a modern society. If Bible scholars really want to be relevant to ordinary Christians, they need to create a plan for engagement. It's not tenable to publish everything in paywalled academic journals, in language that only academics can understand, that only their peers and students can read in any case, and books that only the wealthy and libraries can afford. Hiding is not the answer. They need to hold their peers to account. Daniel Wallace is surrounded by enablers. Bart Ehrman is his friend. But has Bart tried putting any pressure on him to do the right thing? No, he hasn't. Bart simply accepted his apology and acts as if it's between scholars and that the public doesn't matter. Let that truth sink in. Because at the same time, Bart Ehrman is one of the few scholars positively engaged with the public through writing and publishing books intended for non-scholars and running a popular blog for ordinary people. So his difference here is certainly ironic. Ultimately, you can't blame Christians for their disengagement. Biblical scholarship needs to do better. That the NRSV updated edition is the best translation they can come up with, containing deliberately deceptive translation techniques, is very concerning. They need to do better. English translations of the Bible are so bad that most decent Bible scholars give their students their own translations in the classroom. They generally don't care about translations either, because their attitude is that people should just read it in the original language. That might work for nerdy Bible scholars, but it doesn't work for ordinary people. And I would hardly call that an example of positive engagement with the public. They need to hold the evangelicals to account. How is it that in a professional academic profession, there are no consequences for bad behavior? Finally, they should pay more attention to Christianity in the real world. Their profession wouldn't exist without it. And yet, their scholarly findings are rarely shared openly within it.